present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a clipping from the Telegraph read by Corrie Caulfield.
Gravedigger must have the ability to work on own and meet deadlines.
Thanks to Steve Best of Chippenham for that. Let's meet the teams now. Please welcome first on my right, Andy Hamilton and Jeremy Hardy. And opposite them on my left, Francis Ween and Linda Smith. Andy, for whom do the three letters G-A-Y no longer send a chill down the spine?
I'm pleased I'm on this week, actually. well, it's just amazing how wrong you can be about people, isn't it? Because I had always had Michael Portillo down as one of those sort of hard-headed realists. You know, but when this week I saw him telling journalists that he was telling them about his gay past to put the matter to rest, I did start to wonder what planet he was living on, given that even as we speak, anyone who knew him at college is being doorstepped by tabloid journalists. He has admitted to homosexual experiences, a bit vague, I think. I mean, that could just be a stirring in the loins watching Peter Gordino in his dances, couldn't it? I mean, I feel he should be made to put a bit more detail on it, frankly. Andy, because he's standing for Kensington. You see, everything gets loaded with innuendo now. I choose my verbs very carefully. He is
looking for a safe seat, is the point of view.
See? We were tastefully avoiding that kind of material.
His innuendo have been a good friend to this programme for many years. And just when we thought, oh, it's all over, he came out with a cracker about his past. He said, it's all behind me now.
He did also deny sleeping with Peter Lilly, which you would, let's face it.
Oh, yeah.
Can I also deny that I've slept with Peter Lilly?
Said that these were mild homosexual experiences. I don't know what mild means. I suppose it's pleasant but not hot enough to take your jacket off.
I have an awful feeling the word Portillo is going to be turned into a verb. In the way that these popular culture things happen, you know, like an archer, wasn't it?
That's not how you pronounce it, though. It's actually pronounced Portaloo.
Is the way to Michael Portillo. Every night I've been biting my pillow.
I've been to Spain, to his hometown, and Portillo is Spanish for a very small entry.
I don't think he's gay. I think he's jumping on the gay bandwagon. He was beaten by a gay candidate in Enfield. And probably Portillo so arrogant, he thinks, well, that's what it was. Obviously, all the gay people voted for him. Mm. He thinks that Britain is now 80% gay, and that.
Mr. Portillo is known to retain all his political ambition and is said to be eager to start climbing the greasy pole once more. The former MP for Enfield told a reporter that the rumour of his being gay was something he was pleased to nail. That was 2 points to Andy. Jeremy, why is Tony Blair adopting the missionary position?
Well, New Labour's come over all back to basics, and Blair is trying to put teenagers off sex, which I should thought he'd be able to do quite easily, really. But Labour's very concerned that teenagers shouldn't be out at night unless they're trying to get home from a school which is nowhere near where they live. Yeah, they're doing this whole big moral thing, and they're all jumping in on it. The thing about Blair is you sort of think, oh, well, I hope some huge scandal about him comes out, and you think, but he's just not going to, is it, really? There's no earthly way.
But he wants them all to get married as well. It's the other part of his crusade.
Well, to each other, all of them.
Yeah, all these teenagers.
Right.
They ought to get married, because then when they're housebound under Jack Straw's curfew, they can amuse themselves playing mummies and daddies.
Now, when you're married, you're never at home. You're out looking at kitchen furniture and tiles.
He's calling this campaign a moral crusade, which is an unfortunate word, really, because in the Crusades, the men were away for about 10 years and all came back with syphilis, so...
In an interview in The Observer, Prime Minister Tony Blair declared his government was about to embark on a moral crusade. Mr Blair's vision of a just, fair society encompasses everyone, from the highest chief executive in a corporation down to the lowliest senior managing director. 2 points to Jeremy. Linda, which Sun King has criticised the ocean of wisdom?
I beg your pardon?
Which Sun King has criticised the ocean of wisdom?
Ah, Sun King, Rupert Murdoch.
Yes.
Well, Rupert Murdoch has been very insulting to Tibet. He's printed photographs, topless photographs of the Dalai Lama, larking about with Chris Tarrant, which has entirely scuppered his forthcoming wedding to Prince Andrew. It's horrible, really. It's a nasty, spoiling tactic.
What he said was rather weaselly form of words. He said, I have heard cynics say that the Dalai Lama is a hypocrite. I mean, I've heard cynics say that Rupert Murdoch's an awful arse licker. But, I mean, I don't think we should repeat what cynics say. They're horrible negative people. I think Rupert Murdoch should be told, if you can't say something nice about somebody, don't say anything at all.
That should also be our watchword on the news quiz, shouldn't it?
It should be. But also, I don't think it's very gutsy to take on the Dalai Lama. He's not going to ask you to step outside, is he?
No, he is. He's tight when he's riled.
Is
honestly,
he?
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. You have to hold him back. He's got monks going, no, leave it. It's not worth it.
But it's also Murdoch. There's an interview in Vanity Fair, and he's posed for pictures with his new bride. This woman, half
Chinese,
his age.
I believe
so, yeah. Wendy Deng Xiaoping. And Shawcross, the interviewer, starts asking him about Wendy and about how he split up with his previous wife. Murdoch suddenly says, oh, well, that's my private life, and it's no one else's business.
Media tycoon Rupert Murdoch has again outraged human rights activists, appearing to condone China's invasion of Tibet and describing the Dalai Lama as a political old monk shuffling around in Gucci loafers. Translated into English, Dalai Lama means ocean of wisdom, whereas translated into Tibetan, Rupert Murdoch means sea of crap. And as we start round two, here's a cutting from the Times.
A converted Victorian lavatory is being offered for rent as a detached single office at £25 a week in Truro, Cornwall. It has power and a telephone line, but no toilet facilities.
Thanks to Boris Blasco of South Sea for that. Andy, who successfully passed a motion for conference?
Oh, I know.
Have I written on my face with this biro?
No, that's just your face.
All right. Jeremy knows this. What is that?
No, just saying for the listeners that Andy has a full head of raven black hair with tousled curls over his manly frame and basque and jodhpurs. Andrew, that's basque meaning separatist. Andrew Motion has written a poem for the trade union conference, which is, I miss the old TU. It would have been great if it was, it won't be, it will just fit in now with your modern trade unionism. In the old days, it would have been, they'd have had to introduce them saying, now, brothers and sisters, have a bit of, something a little bit different for conference this year, and he's a little bit nervous, I want to give him a lot of support, and it's actually some poetry, brothers and sisters. I know what you're thinking, and believe me, I've read it, and it's not Shelley, I'm telling you, but he's... He's come a long way, and he's a young lad, and he's very keen, and he's giving up his time for nothing. So please give a big hand to Andy Motion.
But in the good old days, they'd have made him do a composite poem, wouldn't they? Where millions of votes, where they'd all vote in different lines, you know.
No, we won't. I wandered lonely as a cloud, line three.
It's all about going for a walk, isn't it? It goes, I wandered about a bit, not very lonely, weren't any daffodils, went home again. And didn't even rhyme.
No.
Why are we... There's no mention of the TUC whatsoever.
No.
Well, you've got a... TUC is hard to rhyme with. How many...
Tuck. Oh, no, maybe not.
It doesn't have to be at the end, does it? The TUC meet once a year, they go to the seaside and drink loads of beer. That rhymes.
They don't, it's Pinot Grigio
that
now.
That was like John Betjeman had just dropped in, wasn't it?
Why is his name? It's not his real name, is it, Andrew Motion?
Well, you wouldn't invent it, would you?
No, I suppose.
But that means he's a motion.
Yeah.
And even worse. If you, your name is Motion and you think your son's going to be a poet, he should have been E-motion. I think that would be
Motion's poem, In a Perfect World, is made up of 30 of the most exquisitely constructed lines you'll ever see outside Lord Frederick Windsor's birthday party. Won't be the first case of a distinguished British poet performing in front of a slightly sceptical audience, as few who saw it will ever forget Palm Air's warm-up for Motorhead at Wembley in 1978. 2 points to Andy. Jeremy, whose decision attracted plenty of interest?
Is this the fact that interest rates are going up?
Mm.
Here's another one, lady. I'll tell you what, missus, interest rates have gone up. And you, sir. Here's another one. Interest rates have gone up.
Correct. 2 points.
$2.5, I think, isn't it?
We don't want to return to the awful days of the late 1980s, said Bank of England Governor Eddie George, or Boy George, as he was known in those days. 2 points to Jeremy. Linda, listen to this.
Now the drugs don't work, they just make you worse, but I know I'll see your face again.
The Drugs Don't Work by the curiously named band Verve. Who is taking a bold new line on hard drugs, Linda?
William Hague.
Mm.
He wants a minimum life sentence for people who sell drugs to children. I don't know, Monsanto, people like that. And yes, he thinks he ought to get tough on drugs because he was worried if he appears to be soft on drugs, it might harm his electoral chances. I think it might be his best bet if we're all stoned out of our heads, don't you? Oh, I think it's the only way he's going to poll a few votes, really, isn't it? Oh, William Hague, what a lovely furry name.
There's a royal, isn't there? Prince Charlie, who's been experimenting with cocaine.
No, he does, Charlie. It's Prince Frederick, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, but no, I was making what we call a joke in comedy, Linda. But you don't need drugs. If you're a member of the royal family, you don't need cocaine to make you a pushy, arrogant waster.
Francis, whose special offer included £2 million cash back?
Lord Sainsbury. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
He's given another £2 million quid to the Labour Party. Not much for five items or less, man, really, Lord Sainsbury. And there's a lot of fuss about this. He gave lots of money to the Labour. I mean, he's given lots before this as well. Then Blair gave him a peerage. Then he made him a minister. And Sainsbury's job includes appearing on the Today programme every other day, telling us how wonderful GM food is. And there's a suggestion this is a conflict of interest. There's a certain amount of, or potential conflict of interest in all these comings and goings. But, I mean, they do it at his shops. They have reward cards, or what do they call them? And you get rewards. And that's what he's got.
Mm-hmm.
And if you try this at Sainsbury's and do enough shopping and get enough points on your reward card, the same thing happens. They'll put you on the board of directors.
And you get a chauffeur-driven car everywhere, don't you, just for buying a box of Daz.
Yeah.
Which branch of Sainsbury's are you going to?
The donation has caused an outcry among Conservatives. They say ministers should not be seen donating money to their own parties. They ought to do it when no one is looking. The scores at the end of round two are a perfect 8 all round. Andy, who found themselves well and truly poleaxed?
Ah, well, this is England's national sport, losing. Not winning. I watched the England-Poland game in a pub in Battersea, where I watched a lot of the World Cup games. It was very enjoyable during the World Cup. There was a kind of festive atmosphere, and you felt that the tournament was uniting the nation, and it began the same way. There was a feeling of us all being a united nation. Within 10 minutes, McManaman was a Scouse git. Shearer was a Geordie word I can't use. But I did spot a new cliché. Obviously, he's made the most of it, which is only applied to foreigners. And I don't know if you saw David Batty's tackle, which, if it's taken to the European Court of Human Rights, would probably classify as an assassination attempt. And I got home and I watched the highlights, and Trevor Brookington, well, it is a bad tackle, yeah, he is late, and obviously the players made the most of it, you know, implying that he's exaggerating. In fact, this Polish player went to such lengths to make the most of it that not only did he lay on the ground writhing in agony, he then got on a stretcher, went off, and they sent the substitute on. That was the lengths that they were prepared to go to in this charade. And they even took him up the hospital, I expect, and x-rayed his leg. And I think that's the kind of thing we're up against. But my theory is that in order to get the players to fear the referee again, you need to get the arbitrary randomness back into the decisions, you know, because the players say they want consistency. Well, that's because they want to know where they stand. But I think if you don't know what the rest can do, he's unpredictable like Stalin, you know, then. So you go out there, you call Robbie Fowler over and tell him that you're sending off for having a stupid plaster on his nose that no one, and he hasn't got a cut. And if it's crucial game, Man U, Arsenal, end of the season, 5 minutes to go, and you know, Arsenal want to bring on their sub, you say he has to wait till someone else comes along and they can go pudding and beef. Now that's, you see, that shows that the audience aren't that old, doesn't it? You don't remember pudding and beef. Because nobody remember going pudding and beef.
Is that an old person's expression?
It was up the park. If you go up the park and you wanted to join in a game and the sides were even, they would say you have to wait till someone else comes along, and then you go, I'll be pudding, you be beef, and then the captains of two teams would say, right, pudding, and you say, you got him. I'm sorry, I didn't dream that. That was.
I think this is one park we're talking about, Andy. You are parochial, aren't you?
I think we should start having random drugs tests in this show.
Radio 4 is going to be flooded with letters of people with memories of playing pudding and beef.
I remember going Oli Oli in for war.
What's that one?
Well, at playtime, you'd get a boy would go in the playground and go Oli Oli in for war. And then another boy would link arms with him. And then another boy on the other side, and they just formed this chain. It meant anybody that wanted to be involved in a war, or a game of war, depending on what point of history it was, would march around in this sort of Tiller Girls routine with all their arms like that, Ollie, Ollie, in for what, and do that for 20 minutes, then we'd all go back in again.
You see, that's what's missing from modern education.
We never did that. We were far too busy selling each other crack.
They didn't have crack, they had laudanum when you were at school.
I can't believe nobody remembers pudding and beef.
Back in the mist of time, the question concerned England's dismal 0-0 draw against a team whose combined annual income is rather less than David Beckham spends on sarongs. Manager Kevin Keegan said David Beckham was inconsolable after the match, as Victoria had rung and said that his highlights looked atrocious. Jeremy, listen to this. I swear by all for one. Jeremy, who will be receiving corporal punishment for swearing.
Oh, this is the British Army. Apparently the army is going to crack down on foul language. And I agree heartily. It's one thing mowing down unarmed civilians, but when... Oh, that coarse language.
Oh! They're also going to tell Sergeant Majors to stop shouting, aren't they?
Are they?
I think so. They're going to calm down and just, you know, suggest that everyone forms a straight line. Be like Captain Wilson in Dad's Army. Would you mind... Would you mind awfully just invading that country?
You've got this code of practice, and if you read it, it sort of says try to instill confidence and a sense of respect for other people's cultures and try to discourage them from fighting and killing and things. It does. It says it in their code of practice. They're not.
You're supposed. Just bitter because you used to be a squaddy, I remember.
But I can't say which part of the armed forces I was actually in.
You weren't in the SAS, were you?
Simon, don't ask me questions like that because I'll have to kill you with my bare hands.
Army officers have been ordered to stop swearing after senior staff were shocked by the language used in a new BBC Fly on the Wall series about army recruits. After narrowly avoiding being hit by a sniper bullet, from now on soldiers must say, "Lawks and lordy, Governor, that was a close shave and no mistake." Francis, whose latest record attempt is verging on the ridiculous?
It's old Branson. He's given up on this balloon business because he had all those attempts to balloon around the world, and he kept being shot down over Algeria or blown to the Sahara Desert or something, and then someone else went up in a balloon and did it properly. So that's no longer a challenge. So now he's going to go across the Atlantic by boat. Quite easy. You book a ticket on the QE2 and then you're there.
It's not as impressive as that man who's going around the world in a pedalo, is it?
I think he's just lost.
He's going round the world on a pedalo, and behind him is a black cat. Come on, you've had half an hour.
Richard Branson is planning to set a new world record for sailing across the Atlantic. He's now given up on the method of attempting to fly across the world since he's discovered it's impossible to keep a balloon afloat if it has a prick in it. And amazingly, the scores at the end of round three are still a perfect 12 points each. We start the final round with a clipping from the Daily Telegraph.
Ships in the Bristol Channel were put on alert yesterday for a 10-foot glass fibre gorilla called Nancy. It was feared that vandals threw it into the sea from a pier at Mumbles near Swansea. Coast Guards warned that any object of this size and weight could be a danger to a pleasure boat or speedboat. Vessels should be alert and keep a sharp lookout for a hazardous gorilla.
Thanks to Paul Kelly for that. Jeremy, which students thought the radio authority was gaga?
Which students thought the radio authority was gaga? Do you know Andrew?
I do.
Go ahead.
No one's called me Andrew for years.
That's because I'm very cross with you. You've been very bad.
That's what I felt, funny enough. I was back in the part. I've come home late for my supper because no one came and I couldn't go pudding and beef. Yeah. This story, Dad, is about a student radio station. They were reported for not doing enough serious stuff, so they adopted the approach that most students would adopt, which is lying. And they'd sent the radio authority March the 8th's worth of radio programming, but they said it was March the 1st, but unfortunately some people had died and stuff, which meant they would have had 7 days advance warning of their deaths, and the radio authority, and they slapped a massive fine on them, which I thought was rather unfair, given that it's a student station. I mean, they won't be able to play bar billiards for months.
But the whole reason they got the franchise, the first student commercial radio franchise, was that they said, well, we're Oxford University, so it's going to be a very serious educational station. You know, it has sort of hour-long seminars from Roy Jenkins on 19th century liberalism, that sort of thing. And instead, they just played the Spice Girls.
shouldn't be knocking young Oxford students because we'll all be working for them in about 2 years.
Oxygen FM was fined £20,000 after trying to deceive the radio authority by changing the whole of its March the 8th output, pretending it was March the 1st, to the bemusement of the student listenership. The deception was first noticed after several students turned up at their doctors complaining of severe acid flashbacks. BBC insiders were glad to point out that their listeners would never be fooled by such a simple trick. So, at the end of round one, the scores are... Linda, who found himself in the pink behind bars?
Oh, this is a silly story. This is this prisoner, isn't it, who sent his Ralph Lauren shirt to the prison laundry, and the shirt came back ruined. It was white and it had gone pink, and then you can see his alarm. The shirt's really shrunk. The T-shirt shrunk. It's pink. It's figure-hugging. It's skimpy. He's wandering around in a prison. It could give out mixed messages.
David Totten is suing his prison governor after his designer T-shirt turned pink in the prison laundry wash.
Why is he suing the governor, though? Does the governor do all the work? These bloody prisoners. I mean, why can't they use the same underpants 2 days running?
Totten was part of a feared gang who wreaked havoc in cashmere sweater shops up and down the land by insisting on trying everything on before they stole it. 2 points to someone, Francis, who are fighting to make a gross profit out of their net dealings.
There's not some thing about internet stocks going
yes.
boring, is it?
It's Argos and the
it
3 quid
oh,
tellies.
That, yeah.
3 quid tellies. They were advertised on the internet for 3 quid. But there was a catch. They were, in fact, £300. And there's been a bit of argy-bargy about that, whether people should be able to buy them at £3 or not. Blimey. Oh, why would anyone bother with Argos? It's a system of shopping that brought down the Eastern Bloc, isn't it? Shuffling with your little tickets from counter to counter. And all for a few potatoes.
Can I just say, we've gone 3 minutes now without a Portillo joke. So we've actually fallen behind the target we set ourselves before.
Andy, do you think he's pudding or beef?
My golden memories of childhood have been destroyed by the cynicism in this building today. I'm going to go home and cry now.
Argos have gone to court after refusing to honour an advert on their website, which rounded down the £300 price tags for digital TV sets to £3. The identity of one purchaser who attempted to buy 1,700 of the cheap TVs is still unknown, though Posh Spice is believed to have wanted one set for every day of the year. Well, let's look at the final score. A perfect 16 all round. Congratulations to them all. And we leave you with a cutting from the Exeter Express and Echo, sent in by Tricia Todd of Wimpole in Devon.
Police are hunting a shoplifter who left a trail of damage as he made a high-speed escape from Sidmouth town centre. Police say he was hell-bent on getting out of the town as quickly as possible, with his haul of razors worth £160 snatched from boots. He's described as about 5'10" tall, with a close-shaven head.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Andy Hamilton, Jeremy Hardy, Linda Smith and Francis Ween. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Corrie Caulfield. The chairman's script was written by Dave Cohen, Tom Jameson and George Poles, and the producer was Lucy Armitage.